Welcome to the Newtown Big Dreams Podcast, an interview-style talk show that's your gateway to the fabulous and fascinating people who relocated to start a new life. Whether you're new to our podcast or your city, our fellow neighbors from across Canada, North America, and the entire English-speaking world share their stories of reaching new horizons and big dreams. So sit back and relax as we navigate in-depth and intimate conversations with entrepreneurs, thought leaders, executives, creatives, and anyone who can share their story about their Newtown big dreams. And now, here's your host, Luke J. Menkes.
Tuesday, April the 13th, 2021. It's about 1 o'clock here on the West Coast. And I am talking to Regina Huber. She is in Miami Beach today. Lucky person. She's based out of New York City, but today she's in Miami Beach. Regina is the founder and CEO of Transform Your Performance, where she drives transformational leadership and guides her coaching clients to increase their influence and impact as leaders. She has eclectic experience on 5 continents, and we're going to talk all about her travel adventures on this show. Regina is a multicultural and multilingual transformational leadership coach, an international inspirational speaker, and author of the book Speak Up, Stand Out, and Shine. So, Regina, welcome to the show. How is the weather in Miami Beach today?
Thank you so much, Luke. Yes, thank you for having me today. It's such a pleasure to speak with you today. I was really curious about you also from the profile I saw online, so I'm excited to be here. The weather is really beautiful today. We had a few days of strong wind, which also came with some rain Sunday night, and I wasn't too happy about that because it messed up my dance plans. Oh. They were going to happen in the park, so.
I see.
But now we're back to sunshine.
Nice. And what brings you to Miami Beach?
Well, this wasn't originally planned. The thing is, last year, when the shutdowns started, I was in New York City and I'd just come back from 2 months in Africa, 1 month in Uganda, 1 in Rwanda. I had been in New York for just a little bit over a month, and I had lined up all sorts of different speaking engagements and training engagements in mostly in Africa, but also some conference speaking in Kansas City, in London, in Hawaii. And of course, all these Africa travel plans, the first was actually to go back to Rwanda and speak at the Kigali Convention Center. And then I had lined up some other gigs in Kenya, South Africa, Nigeria, and so on. But all of that was canceled all of a sudden. So my entire situation all of a sudden changed. And I decided to go out of New York City in that particular situation and flee the city and actually travel to Mexico. And I spent several weeks there. I came back to the U.S. I spent a few months again in New Jersey and in New York. And then I went home and decided to see my family. And that also became a little bit of more extended period of time. So home is Germany.
Okay.
And after that, I came to Miami Beach. And, you know, ever since I got here in November, I've been traveling back and forth to New York. But it's been quite a nice time here. I've been able to dance, which is not possible right now in New York City.
Right.
So that's been good. And I've just tried to make the best of it.
So with all these places you've been to recently, would you say Florida is the most open as far as the COVID restrictions and what you're allowed to do?
Yeah, you know, it changes all the time. When I was back in Germany, it wasn't as strict as it is now either. Mm. And it changes back and forth. You know, that's part of the plan. Not going to go into that topic too much. But so here it's Miami's probably a little more restricted than the rest of Florida, as far as I know or can tell. But it's it's pretty much open. And I enjoy, you know, I'm somebody who always like always says, all I do is in the service of freedom. So I'm a freedom person.
Yes.
And I absolutely want to self-determine and also, you know, really decide what I do with my health and how I protect myself. But yes. Again, you know, it's really just, I think it depends a little bit on how you look at it. I think for different people, it's a different experience.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Even here.
I've heard good things about Florida in general. I know it's a little bit crazy all over the planet right now, but I think most places in Florida, you can have a certain degree of freedom that we're not experiencing in many parts of the world. So that's somewhat positive. So your business, inspiring people and so on, what inspired you to create this business and what's the story behind it?
Yeah, so, you know, I grew up as a very shy girl in a small village, a tiny village. There was not even a shop there, right?
In Germany.
So, but I always had this insatiable curiosity, and I also inherited my dad's adventurous spirit. And this is what eventually, you know, pushed me out into the world. And my dad, for example, he loved to travel, but he couldn't always do it as much as he would have because I grew up on a farm. So he was a farmer and also had a job.
Right.
But he tried to get away quite often, and I inherited that to a certain extent. So my curiosity and my appetite for adventure really pushed me out of that little village and into the big world. And so I moved to Munich and then to Madrid. I did a lot of work also in Portugal, out of Spain, and then I moved to California. I owned businesses in Buenos Aires and Rio de Janeiro. And, you know, I lived in those two countries twice, Argentina and Brazil, and I've traveled now more in on the African continent and also to Qatar. And the reason why I'm saying this is because all this eclectic experience has eventually come together in my current business, right? So there's more to it, of course. I also integrate knowledge that I gained from my holistic studies, from my passion for dance, but this very rich multicultural experience and also having to deal with corruption along the way. All these different pieces have really come together into my current coaching and speaking and training business. Mm-hmm. Because as we know, as we both know, there are a lot of coaches, but everybody does it in their own way, right? And this is, I think, what makes me unique in this way.
Neat. So you were a shy person growing up. You grew up in a very, very small town in Germany. How were you able to transform into the confident, vibrant person you are today, traveling to all these strange countries? How did you get past that?
Yeah, it hasn't always been easy. And I didn't just change from one day to the next, of course. First of all, I had to adapt and to really stamp my woman, to call it something, in each new location. I had to meet people because we are... As humans, you know, our success depends on relationships and we are social beings. So I had to meet people. I had to overcome this shyness in all of these different locations. Also, sometimes even when I didn't speak the language that well yet. Yeah. Mm. So it was quite challenging at times, especially in Spain, because I just, studied a little Spanish before I moved there. And then, you know, the Spaniards, they talk very fast.
Right.
It's hard to follow a lunch conversation because everybody talks at the same time and over each other. And it's fun, but it's hard in the beginning.
Yes. Oh, sure.
So all these different situations taught me to be confident because I was forced to in a way. But then, of course, I also learned confidence through dance, for example.
Oh.
Dance, in the beginning, it was mostly partner dance that I did. But dance really pulled me out of my shell, so to speak, because I had to now find a way to self-express. Yes. Mm-hmm. Although yes. I did not grow up with dance, and that's the challenging part about it. But yeah, so I wanted to dance. So I had to really find that way to express myself. And in partner dance, there's another element as well. I wanted to dance with some of the best dancers. Mm-hmm. And that required me walking up to them and asking them to dance with me.
Right.
Because they didn't know me in the beginning, you know, and I wasn't a good dancer right from the start. So I really had to dig up that courage and pluck up that courage and take that risk. And I think I learned a lot through dance in that sense. Mm-hmm. Also, of course, later on, and especially after I moved from Brazil to New York, I had to actually rebuild all my confidence. So I had been building up this confidence gradually over all those years. And all of a sudden, about 10 years ago, all this confidence that I had built up with so much effort was completely destroyed. And
really?
My self-esteem was below zero. And this happened through a very painful experience with a business partner, which cost me not only my business at the time and load of money, but mm-hmm. also my confidence. Wow. I had to find a way to rebuild this from scratch. And in the beginning, what helped me a lot was some tools that I came up with myself, and I put them later into my book, Speak Up, Stand Out, and Shine. These are ways that help us prepare mentally, physically, and energetically for challenging situations, such as speaking, such as sales conversations, such as meetings. You name it, any business situation, really, or any other situation that's challenging. Mm-hmm. But those tools I still use, but, you know, at the time I had to use them more often, more frequently. And also holistic healing for sure helped me through that very challenging initial period.
I want to ask you about holistic healing, but first, you speak a lot of languages, English, obviously, German, obviously. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Spanish. How many languages do you know? Do you speak fluently in?
I speak 5.5. I speak 4 fluently and also French. So the 4 that I speak fluently are, of course, my native tongue, German, English, Spanish, and Portuguese. Mm-hmm. And Spanish and Portuguese, you know, the accents in those languages have changed a lot. They right. are now a combination of many different places.
Yeah.
So that's fun. And then I also speak, I did study French, and I know how to write it correctly and all of that, but it's just a little more rusty. I mm-hmm. love Italian as well. So that would be the half language that
I see.
Would come really easy to me because I studied Latin, but I don't have a lot of opportunity to speak it.
Right. Which out of all those, which one do you think was the hardest to learn?
It's hard to tell because I studied Latin first, and then, you know, that of course helped me with the Latin-rooted languages such as mm-hmm. French, Spanish, and Portuguese. But I think Portuguese has the most complicated grammar.
Really?
And it's also especially European Portuguese, but also Brazilian Portuguese, which is quite different.
Quite different, yeah. I learned Spanish in Latin America. And then when I visited Spain, I noticed it was quite different. The accent was different and the grammar was different. And especially the colloquial expressions, they would say things that didn't make sense from Dominican Republic to Miami, where I lived for a while, to and in Miami, it was mostly a lot of Cuban Americans and Puerto Ricans as well. But it was very, very different when I went for vacation in Spain.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so different. The two types of Portuguese are even more different because they sound completely different. The grammar is, in fact, different. And also, as you said, you know, the local expressions, of course, as well. But the sound is so completely
totally different. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really surprising. Yeah.
In your books, you talk about a self-empowering mindset and heart set. But why is the mindset not enough? Why do we need the heart set also?
Well, I'd like to say if we only focus on mindset, we miss out on 50% of our intelligence. Our heart perceives independently of our mind, and it's also where we get our courage from. It's get where we get our intuition from, our inspiration, and it's where we find our very, very unique and specific wisdom. That's the one wisdom that is specific to us as individuals. Yes. So I think that's why there's a lot of science nowadays that supports this. For example, we have about 40,000 brain-like cells in our heart. We didn't know this several decades ago, but it's now scientifically proven. And we also know that the heart has its own memory. When we have a heart transplant, for example, certain things are transplanted with the heart. Like, for example, the person who gets the transplant might now like different foods than before.
I didn't know
that. And that's very interesting also to read up on. There's a lot of information nowadays, but of course, you know, it's still new to some people. We also say the heart is really a part of the brain because it's so... It's not only communicating with the brain continuously, it is really a part of the brain, and we call it the heart brain.
Yeah, that is so interesting. I know in poetry and literature going back centuries, you know, it's the heart is referred to as something that's an emotional center, a feeling center, a thinking center, and now we can prove it by science that it is actually that. So
yes, and so many indigenous people, they knew this all the way. You know, it's just like we forgot it in our so-called civilization. You know, we forgot so much rich knowledge and wisdom because we've just pushed it to the side.
Yeah, for sure. So how do you get a self-empowering heart set and mindset?
Yeah, well, the self-empowering mindset, you know, it has a lot to do, of course, with observing our thoughts, our thought patterns, our behavioral patterns, because they come from our behavior comes from our thoughts, our beliefs, and all of that, and realizing that a lot of it is subconscious programming and conditioning. I think most people know this by now. What's interesting is that about 95 or even some say 97% of our behavior is driven by our subconscious. And we are oftentimes not aware of that. So when we talk about mindset, a lot of people stay very much at the surface, but we have to go deeper and really become the observers of our thoughts so we can then evaluate what serves us, what serves our vision, our goals, our purpose, or what we want to achieve in general and what doesn't serve us. And when it comes to the heart set, well, it's really more about connecting with our hearts and with its wisdom and with, you know, we have so many expressions that have the word heart in them. So look at those expressions and see the richness in those and what you can get out of those. Yeah. For example, I prefer 1,000 times nowadays to make heart-driven decisions. They're often the best because they rely on my intuition. And, you know, the decisions that are right for you are not necessarily right for me. So there's actually no such thing as purely objective, fact-driven decisions. Right. I might still use facts, and that's not a wrong thing to do, of course. Right. But oftentimes it's really hard to make a decision when it's a really tough one, only based on so-called facts, which are never purely facts anyway.
I really believe that. And the facts, it really depends how those facts relate to us as unique individuals, right? It's not like an objective set of facts, but the circumstances that are affecting us directly. Now, you love travel, and you wanted to talk about travel today and some of your adventures. So you've got a list of cities here, great cities. I've been to maybe half of those, but some I haven't been to. So would you tell us a bit about Buenos Aires and what you loved about it and maybe some adventure you had there?
Yeah, absolutely. As I told you earlier, I moved to Madrid when I was 26 from Munich. And, you know, at the time I moved with a job, although I self-initiated this move. And then I moved to other different places, and this was with a global consulting firm, and I moved a few times with them. But I didn't always move with a job when I moved to another continent. Sometimes I just moved to another continent with just a dream in my pocket. Yes.
Right.
So, and this is how, on a hot summer day, all of a sudden I found myself in the middle of Buenos Aires carrying several hundred thousand dollars in my socks to buy a property. And I think you will love this story, Luke, because I think you are also in real estate from what I read.
Yes.
So that was in 2005. And that's when I left my well-paying job in San Francisco behind. And I went to Argentina to open a bed and breakfast in Buenos Aires. And buying the house was a bit more adventurous than I could wish for. So in Argentina, you pay for real estate in cash, at least at the time. I'm not quite sure how it is right now, but this was not too long ago, 2005, right?
Yeah.
So you literally sit around a table in a meeting room in a bank and count the dollars.
Wow.
I had to transport my cash to the seller's bank somehow, and I didn't have a car. And there were all sorts of stories going around about taxes waiting outside of banks to then rob you and all of that. And these were real stories. I mean, I knew people that this had happened to, right? So What happened is, on a hot summer day in Buenos Aires, I found myself carrying several hundred thousand dollars across the city in my socks.
Wow.
And I was carrying them from one bank for many, many long blocks, because I couldn't carry them directly because the other bank was too far away. But until I eventually, you know, decided to take a cab and take the rest and go the rest of the way in that way. But
yeah.
You know, as I was walking, I was really hoping that those dollars wouldn't fall out of my socks, because, you know, if those fell out, just one wrong move and all my savings could have been gone, right? And, and these were all my savings that I had worked 15 years for.
Wow.
But at the time, what I figured is, and this is really important, and I don't know if I would do the same exact thing again, but at the time, what was going through my mind was that if I wanted something really, really bad, I had to take a risk.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. So you withdrew cash from the bank, and I'm guessing it was larger denominations. Like, did you have bulging socks, or what was this like?
So it wasn't exactly a bank. So I had somebody help me with the transfer, which is another whole crazy adventure story. All the money disappeared somehow on the way there, and I found it again on the internet. But, you know, that was like the most nerve-wracking experience I had in my entire life. But, you know, so the people who helped me with the money transfer, they did help me to get organized for that day. So I picked it up at their place, actually. But people know where these people are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if it's almost as if you walk out of a bank, basically.
Yeah.
Right. Because, I mean, people who rob others professionally, they know what's going on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, was it like a thick bunch
of
money?
It was a lot of packets. Yeah. So it was too hot, actually, to wear jeans and socks anyway that day. Right.
Oh.
But I had to somehow do it this way. I didn't want to carry it in a backpack or in a
Didn't want to make it obvious. So it sounds like you walked out of that money place and kind of went, walked a little bit before getting into a cab. You didn't want to get into a cab directly outside. And how did it go? Did it work out?
It worked out. I arrived safely at the bank gladly, and I had to actually do pretty much the same thing again when I sold the house, because I was, with part of the money, I was buying a smaller apartment at the time. So I was going through the same process again, pretty much.
Nice.
But
And did you enjoy running the bed and breakfast, and why did you sell it?
I did, but you know, I was a little bit too tied to the house all the time because it was not a huge bed and breakfast. It was a smaller one. I was actually number one on TripAdvisor for the entire time it was open of 45 bed and breakfasts back then in Buenos Aires. So it was quite successful. It was always fully booked. But I also had to deal with a lot of corruption attempts, you know, like you have to have a license to open the bed and breakfast. And I also had an investor's visa. So I had to open the bed and breakfast within a year, which I did. I actually opened a month before the timeline was over. But they didn't give me the license on time. And this is something that didn't only happen to me. It happened to everybody. Yes. So they don't give you the license. I didn't get a formal license until the end, you know. But they do this on purpose because then they come along and they knock on your door and they want money and they want you to pay them off. But I never did. I was probably one of the only ones who never did. So I got fined, but I contested the fine and I took it to court and I won the course. The case. I won the case because I told the judge, I remember it was a female judge, and I told her about the corruption attempts and she said, tell me more. And that's how I won the case.
Wow, fantastic. So Brazil, you spent a bit of time in Brazil. Are the two big cities, Rio and Sao Paulo, are they very different cities?
They are completely different.
Tell us some adventure stories from Brazil. Did you like better of the two?
So, you know, they're very, very different, but I definitely did like Rio de Janeiro much better because, of course, it has a beautiful, you know, the beautiful beach and tropical climate and the tropical vegetation. And it's just such an amazing scenery that you see every single day in Rio de Janeiro. It's hard to describe and put it in words. There's no other place like Rio, I would say. Sao Paulo is huge, right? It has over 20 million inhabitants, and the population is huge. You never know, you know, how fast you can get out of that city. I mean, at one point, I think it took us 4 hours on a Friday afternoon to get just to the airport. And it's just such an ocean of buildings and with also houses in between, but you know, it's huge. It has beautiful and really wonderful restaurants from all over the world. So that's something I really like. And a lot of other great stuff. It's more like the business city. And Rio de Janeiro is more like, you know, where you want to live. I did a lot of dancing in Rio, Sambariga Fiera dancing, which I cannot find anywhere else in the world. Some other Brazilian dances, of course, as well that are better known. But, you know, I just had a really great time in Rio de Janeiro. But it was a combination of things. It was also a very tough experience.
Really? So tell us a story about a tough experience there.
Yeah, so in Rio de Janeiro, I had a brick-and-mortar business again. And as I told you earlier, I had a very, very painful experience with a business partner at the time who was fraudulent. Only part of my business was really connected to him, but the entire name of the business depended on his name. So this is why that one part, when I found out that he was fraudulent there, it also impacted the other part of the business. And eventually I had to decide to close down this business in which I had invested two entire years of my life, all my savings again, and a lot of effort, of course. And yeah, so that was painful. It was, I was seriously depressed for some time because it took me a long time to clean up the mess. It was, again, I had to deal with a lot of corruption. Paperwork is very, very tough in Brazil and expensive. So yeah, it was a very unique experience. It's probably in hindsight also why I do what I do now, or at least what catapulted me to what I do now. But at the time, while you're in the midst of it, of course, you know, it looks quite different.
Was it a situation that you felt would just maybe never end? What was the reason, do you think, that it impacted you personally so profoundly?
Yes. I felt very much alone with having to resolve the situation. You know, mm-hmm. all of a sudden now there was also a problem with the documentation of the property, which hadn't shown up when I bought the property. You know, all of a sudden this was to be resolved as well. So I had a lot of delays when trying to sell the property, which caused me additional financial loss. And it was just also very disappointing because this was at the time, it was my dream project. Afterwards, what was also a big decision is, am I moving to a different location or not? Because again, I had an investor's visa, and my visa and my residency permit depended on this business. Mm-hmm. And eventually I decided to move to New York City, which was another place that had always attracted me in the past. And that's what I did. Mm-hmm. I was going back and forth a lot the first few years. So my energy was a little bit split and dispersed there because I had to really still deal with the Brazil situation for a while. But sure. While I was doing this, I was already rebuilding the self-empowering mindset that we talked about earlier. So I really needed to make that decision to step out of victim mode and into this self-empowering mindset. And that's when things started shifting.
Yeah. Interesting. So when you talk about being body and energy conscious presence, how does that help us to show up more powerfully in business?
It's also partly what I talk about in my book and how to prepare for speaking in other challenging situations. All we are is energy. Mm-hmm. And yet we hardly talk about energy when it comes to business.
Right.
And I think when you know how to manage your energy, you have an edge in business.
True.
I also wonder why they don't want you to talk about energy. Is it maybe because then you become too powerful? Mm-hmm. Is it maybe because you realize how powerful you really are? You know, energy has all these different aspects. We can, when we learn how to connect with our inner power, it's also easier to become more acquainted with our potential and really access it and tap into it. And this inner power connection then also shows in our outer presence. Mm-hmm. And when we have these tools on how to prepare physically and energetically, this is what changes our perceived presence. You know, we've probably heard about or remember people when at networking events,
yes,
that come into the room and everybody notices them.
Yes.
Although they haven't even said a single word yet.
It's very true. I always wonder what that is. You can feel it, yeah. Actually. Yeah. Even if they're coming in from the side or behind, you feel something.
Yes, that's energy. Your energy precedes you. Mm-hmm. And this is also true for conversations over the phone, especially because we don't have the visual aspect here. So the energy becomes even more important now.
I see.
Your energy always speaks louder than your words. And it speaks faster. It's the first thing that people notice about you because it takes only 0.07 seconds for our brains to figure out whether we can trust somebody. And that's about your energy. And that is so fast because it's our survival mechanism. So it has to be fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if you understand this situation that I go through sometimes, but I used to be a very shy and introverted person, but I got comfortable being in person with people, and I'm really good at sales when I can be face to face with the person, but I still to this day, get nervous on the telephone, and I find it hard to be really present because I'm really self-absorbed and nervous. For some reason, the telephone triggers me now. It's gotten better over the years, but I still don't have the level of confidence on the telephone that I do in person. And that's the reason I have the video going when I'm talking to you, because I feel much more comfortable being able to see you.
Yes. Why is that? Well, because you can interpret my reactions, right? You can see me. So it's when we're on the phone, we are missing out on that element, the visual element, and it's a part of our regular communication.
Right.
Yes. So we have words, we have our body communication, all the nonverbal aspects, you know, energy, all of that. And then we have the visual aspects, the voice. So you still are using your voice, you still are using your vocabulary, your words. But what we forget to use over the phone oftentimes is the energy. And if you prepared with, for example, some of the tools in my book, Speak Up, Stand Out, and Shine, I bet that you would have an easier time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm going to check out your book for sure. So if someone wants to distinguish themselves as a leader or a candidate to be a leader, what are some of the tips? We talked about being present. We talked about having a good mindset, good heart set. Mm-hmm. What are some other tips that you give to people who want to be leaders or become leaders?
Well, I have come up with a signature framework that I call the Powerful Leadership Transformation, or PLT. And it has four pillars. And we already talked about two, the self-empowering mindset and heart set, as well as the body and energy conscious presence.
Right.
A third pillar is distinctive uniqueness. And the fourth pillar is more a consequence of all the other three, and that would be inspired and effective action. But one way to stand out is through your distinctive uniqueness.
Okay.
Of course, we know that we're all different. We all have, you know, unique DNA, unique fingerprints. We know we look different. And that in itself, I think, is freaking fascinating already.
Very true.
But we also want to use these differences and use the valuable pieces of it to stand out as a leader or as a leadership candidate or as a candidate for the promotion we want, whatever our situation is, right? And in order to be able to do that, we have to go really deep with it and dig deep and say, okay, what are our most valuable strengths? What are our, you know, natural strengths, our acquired skills? What is that unique package that's made up of all these different elements, talents, skills, experiences, stories? We talk about my eclectic experience, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody has their experience, and what's my unique wisdom? What is my unique value that I bring to the table as a result of this very specific package that I am as a human being?
Right. Yes. So you talked about dance, and you said that when you started to dance, it really helped you with your self-confidence and helped you to break out of your shell. So how does that, that's one of your biggest passions in life, I think, dancing. How does that influence the work that you do?
Yeah, so dancing has really taught me a lot of business and leadership lessons.
Really?
Yes. You know, you think it's not really related to what I do, but it's very much related to all the four pillars of my Powerful Leadership Transformation framework. We already talked a little bit about the self-empowering mindset. And we talked about confidence, and that's also related to courage, and courage comes from the heart. So this is the heart set. Yes.
Yes.
We dance also taught me about teamwork, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, in a team, we have to rely on each other, right? Well, in a dance ensemble, we sometimes have to rely on each other to an extent that our lives depend on it. For example, if we do like aerial movements,
right?
Dance taught me a lot about nonverbal communication. In partner dance, I've become really good when it comes to picking up the little cues and signs of my dance partner's body and what he wants to transmit to me. And that's made me a great follower in dance, but also I can use that in my business environment as well.
Interesting.
There are so many different stories. I put them all into a blog that's on my website at transformyourperformance.com. There is a blog page, and there's a whole list of lessons, actually.
Right. Okay. So do you think that dance is something that everybody should try? Or is this it's good that you've done it, And you're able to teach people about energy and about presence because of your dance activities. But is this something we should all do? Should we all take a dance class?
I think you should do, and I don't like that word anyway, should do. But right. I think everybody's different. Everybody has different preferences. Everyone has to find their own way of getting into their most powerful self.
Okay.
However, having said that, why not try, for example, something like power dancing? I mean, I think most people love music to a certain extent.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to look a certain way. Just move in a way that makes you feel good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that might apply to everybody.
Yes.
But if it doesn't apply to you, find something else. And you can also find your energy in other ways.
Right.
Like in the exercises I share in the book. But also, you know, if you like to work out or whatever it is that works for you, is right. Just fine.
It could be a certain sport, probably.
Yes.
Any way we can get in tune with our bodies, I'm guessing.
Into our bodies. Helpful. Yeah. You could even sit and feel into your body.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, makes sense. So the last thing I want to ask you about is your recent travels to Africa. What's it like there? My daughter is gone. I've never been to Africa. It seems like such a fascinating and mysterious place.
Well, yeah. So Africa is a huge continent,
right?
We often, a lot of people always think, oh, it's Africa. No, it's all these, 50 something countries, right? So, we have to really look at the continent because each country is different. And even within the countries, we have different cultures as we have within our own countries. Here in the US, right? And we have different expressions of that culture as well. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely rich in that sense. I have not been to half of the African continent yet, although I want to go to many more places.
Yep.
I have spent about over 5 months of the last 3 years there, but a lot of that time was in Johannesburg and in some other cities of South Africa, but I've also been to Cameroon, Ghana, Uganda, Rwanda, I mentioned earlier, and Morocco. Wow. Again, super different in the
north. Very, very different.
And I have so many plans to go to other places, and I have friends in other places, and I talk to them. And even just by talking to them, it's again so different. But what I want to say is it's extremely rich in culture. There's so much we can learn. There's so much we can appreciate. I love African fashion, for example. I love African music and dance. That's my, one of my preferences. So I have a really great time there dancing. Nice. And finding out about new dances and new music. Wonderful. So I also take a Congolese Ndombolo dance classes. I do Angolan partner dancing, which is called Kizomba and Samba, and some other dances that I have taken classes for, like Afrobeat, which is more, which is quite popular also in the U.S.
Right.
And in West Africa and whatnot. But there's so many different things so and many, types. Yeah.
I heard Johannesburg is a very European-looking city. Is that true?
It depends where. So I used to stay always in Maboneng most of the time. I also stayed a few days in other parts of the city that are very modern and very, that are more like office areas.
Right.
However, I prefer much to stay in Maboneng, which is, you would call it a recuperated inner city district. It's called the precinct of Maboneng, but you also need to know how far you can walk and not walk and all these different things. But it's just such a vibrating environment. I'm not quite sure what it looks like right now, although I do talk to people from there sometimes. It used to be very vibrating when I was there. There was a lot of dancing going on. It's sort of a combination. The the population there is, you know, people from Johannesburg, people from other parts of South Africa, and also some tourists or some people who moved there from other places. It's a very mixed, very artistic environment.
Yeah.
But it is near other areas that are, you know, where you have to be quite careful when you walk, because you, like in any of those big cities, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But I have to also say, because of my adventurous spirit, I have seen places in Johannesburg that none of my even local friends have been to. Nice. And certainly not tourists that I know.
Right.
So one of them is the drill hall next to the MTN taxi rank by Hillborough. So if you talk to people from there, they will know where that is. But a lot of them would not have been there. And and you know, I actually walked all the way from Maboneng there, not by myself. That would just be not advisable. But I met this guy in the street, and he was selling arts and crafts, basically.
Okay.
And he gave me some earrings, and we started talking about dance and whatnot. He said, "You have to visit us. We also dance there. We produce all these different things, handbags and a lot of different objects from recycled materials and jewelry, and come visit us." And I said, "Well, okay, let me know exactly where it is." So then I talked to somebody else, some of my friends, and they said, "No Uber will take you there." So I said, "Okay, how am I going to get there, right?" So I said to him, "Okay, you have to come and we walk together, because I'm not going to go there by myself if an Uber doesn't take me there, and you know how I'm going to get there." Mm-hmm. So we walked together, and it was the most amazing experience I've ever had in Johannesburg. I will never regret it. So we walked by a car wash. Everybody was greeting me, because they were really appreciative that somebody actually came from outside that didn't mm-hmm. live there or work there. And they did a Rasta wrap for me. So you would not be able to take photos usually, because you couldn't pull out your phone. It wasn't safe. Mm. But, you know, they would form a circle, and they would do this Rasta wrap until I could film it and have this memory. This guy was a Rasta guy. He was actually from Zimbabwe. But so and then, you know, it was the fact that I couldn't take photos for most of the except for the drill hall itself when we were inside, and when they showed me all the beautiful things they produced there, actually also made that these images are still very clear in my mind, you know.
Interesting.
And what was also interesting is he was wearing a shirt with long sleeves, yes, mm-hmm. despite the heat. And we were walking back to Maboneng. It's about a maybe 30-minute walk or so, mm-hmm. so or a 40-minute, depending on how fast you walk, of course. So then we walked back, and as we got back and arrived in Maboneng, he pulled up his sleeve, and I saw like huge scissors in here that he had put in there just in case we got attacked or something or anything wow. happened. Because, of course, he wouldn't be, you know, they know him.
Yes.
But if he walks with a tourist, although I didn't consider myself so much a tourist anymore, but, but you know, I still look like one. So.
Right. I'm just curious, based on all the people you've met in Africa, you're still talking to people. What's the situation with the lockdowns in Africa? Because we don't hear much about it.
It depends on each country again.
Each country, you know, is different.
I mean, let's take some extremes. I mean, South Africa is definitely not one of the better places in that sense. Nigeria, well, it also depends where, because there are places where people just cannot afford to follow the lockdown rules.
Yeah. Right.
If yeah. you are at a certain level of poverty, for example, and not that all of Africa is poor, I'm not going to make that impression at all, but we have a lot of differences, right? In Nigeria, there's some very rich people as well. And there's all these different, just like here, but probably a little bit more extreme. So the thing is, you know, you want to, you just go about your life, because you yeah. can't afford to not work.
Right.
You know, like
right.
here as well, depending on what your situation is. Mm-hmm. And what was really sad is that, without going too much into politics, but that some of the presidents were, in my opinion, eliminated because they opposed that agenda.
Yes.
And the most recent example is the president of Tanzania.
Yeah, I've heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
Burundi is another example, right? We have some other examples.
It's a little bit scary times right now with all that, but
John Magufuli. He was. I was wondering how much longer he would make it. Frankly, I just said it to a friend literally 2 days before I heard about it. You know, it's really important to, in these very challenging and trying times, for everybody to find their own truth. Even, you know, what I'm saying here is what I have researched. If you have a different truth, that's totally fine. It's important to do your research. It's important to always stay in your own truth find that inner power inside of yourself in order to move it through challenge, to make it and move through challenging times. And we all can do it.
Yes. Wonderful. Regina, thank you for your time today. It's been a really fascinating conversation. We could talk for hours about all these amazing cities that you've visited and all your adventures. And hopefully we can do this again in the near future. And just talk about some more of those cities.
Yes, definitely. Oh my God. That's for some other time. Thank you so much for having me, Luke.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Newtown Big Dreams podcast with your host, Luke Menkes, and his authentic guests. And we love our listeners and hope you subscribe now to learn more about the amazing journeys of our incredible guests who relocated to find a new town, big dreams. And remember, make your dreams big.